This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
According to Wild Wilderness, America's mountains, rivers, deserts, and woodlands are suddenly taking on new values as profiteers attempt to package, brand, market, and ultimately sell America's great outdoors as value-added recreation products. Following this model, outdoor recreation on public lands would cease to be characterized primarily as experiences of physical and spiritual recreation. They would instead be turned into branded products created for the purpose of being sold to paying customers. Scott Silver is Executive Director of Wild Wilderness, and he joins me this morning from Bend, Oregon. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to talk to you. Now, you've written about three different visions for the future of public lands, the traditional, the industrial strength recreation, and industrial tourism. Could you sketch for a moment how these visions might play out on a day in the outdoors?
Well, I certainly can. In the traditional vision, you can imagine yourself bouncing along a gravel road to eventually get to a lake where there's very little in the way of development, perhaps a primitive campground, and perhaps at that lake you might picnic and camp in a primitive campground, float around, maybe fish in your canoe. That would be a traditional form of recreation. Industrial strength recreation, spelled with a W the way Ed Abbey would have done it, is more like you speed down the paved highway till you get to a lake, and when you get to that lake, you unhitch your ATVs from the back of your motorhome, and then maybe go over to the marina and enjoy a little rental of a jet boat or something or other. The third vision of industrial tourism is you'd get to that lake, stopping at a bunch of prepackaged trails along the way with various kinds of interpretation. And when you get to the lake, you may not ever get there. You'd park your car, you'd take the monorail, and you'd see the IMAX presentation of what the area looks like in its natural splendor. I fear that the original model of traditional recreation is far down the road of being sacrificed to those two later visions.
Now, I understand that the American Recreation Coalition is having a big impact on this trend, and in fact, in some ways, they're driving this trend. What role, who are they, first of all, and then what role are they playing in this trend to commercialize public lands?
Well, they're playing an enormous role. The American Recreation Coalition is a lobby group composed of about 150 corporations. They were created in 1979, and the kinds of member companies would be the kinds of companies that make motorcycles, ATVs. Used to be Chevron and Exxon, and the American Petroleum Institute were all members. The concessionaires that operate the campgrounds on most public lands, including the ones that operate the national parks in the U.S., and some name brand ones like the Walt Disney Company. Their influence cannot be overestimated. They worked with President Ronald Reagan in the 80s to create their vision of how public land should be managed. And it's taken 20 years, but under President Bush, clearly the direction that was started with Reagan is about to become the new direction of public land management.
How would a corporation like Disney be interested in public lands?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that. Back in the 70s, Disney made a direct foray onto the public lands here in the U.S., with an effort to develop an area called Mineral King. It was really quite famous. It caused the National Sierra Club to eventually divide itself into two different organizations, one that remained a nonprofit, but one that was able to become a legal foundation and fight that directly. Disney's always wanted to expand from the private theme park onto public lands. And in fact, just this year, it has been announced that on a trial basis, the Walt Disney Company will be running tours in Yellowstone National Park as well as a national park in Hawaii. And for a family of four willing to pay up to about $7,500, they can be taken around the park where Disney characters may appear in costume. Quite a dramatic change from anything we've ever had in our national parks before. And unfortunately, I think the harbinger of things to come.
Yes, that's really quite shocking, actually, as a person who actually goes out quite a bit into parks for the purpose of actually being in contact in an unmediated way towards nature. I find that quite shocking that you might encounter Disney characters on a tour of a national park.
Well, you can also encounter a lot of corporate sponsorship these days. You can walk in Yosemite, and you can walk on the Chevron Boardwalk. Yellowstone, you can walk on the, I had brain failure. The company that bought Ben & Jerry's recently, Unilever. Unilever has trails, Unilever trails. In Acadia National Park, the interpretive signs are provided by Georgia Pacific, the timbering company. And it's getting worse.
Now, I understand that there's a huge RV lobby as well, and I guess that they're associated with the American Recreation Coalition. What kind of influence have they been having over the development of parks and other public lands?
Oh, that's incredible. The chairman of the board of the American Recreation Coalition is, in fact, the president of the Recreational Vehicle Industry Association. And so the American Recreation Coalition is first and foremost a motorhome lobby group. And in the U.S. at least, so many of the campgrounds on the Forest Service lands were primitive campgrounds, where basically there was very little provided, perhaps an outhouse, perhaps a water source, and some clearings where you could set your tents up. What we're seeing is transformations of those sites into places that look like campgrounds of America. We're seeing paving done. We're seeing pull-through sites. So instead of having a little nestled clearing in the woods, you've got this ribbon of concrete where you have full hookups, and they're now promoting internet access. They're promoting reservation systems so that you can go online with your computer from your motorhome and then book your reservation the next night. And the company that has the monopoly in the U.S. on that is a division of Ticketmaster, which is the big entertainment reservation system. The public lands here are becoming very commercial and very oriented towards motorized recreation of every sort, everything from a jet ski or a dirt bike to a motorhome, which really is just another form of motorized recreation.
Now, I understand that one of the key battles that your organization is fighting is the imposition of the feed demonstration program. And when I've been hiking in the United States, these feed demonstrations, which might be, you know, just like $5 or $3 for parking or trail use or something like this, when I've been hiking in the States, they've been explained to me by parks and forest personnel as a way of improving local facilities like trails and you know, walk across bridges over little streams and restoring backcountry camp spots. Should I be taking this at face value?
No, you shouldn't. Once again, the reason we have the fee demonstration program, which has become a law authorized for 10 years, and it goes by a new name now, but let's continue to call it fee demo. It was created by the American Recreation Coalition, and the reason that they worked so hard for 20 years to bring it about was in the U.S. we had a prohibition upon charging for recreation on public lands. We could only charge in our national parks for entrance fees or in developed campgrounds for campground fees or for a couple of other very, very limited examples, some visitor centers and some mechanical boat launches. And other than that, fees were prohibited. The purpose for the fee demonstration program was to eliminate that prohibition upon charging and to bring the profit motive to public lands. When Ronald Reagan proposed the fee demonstration program the first time in 1982, he explicitly called for cutting the budgets of the land management agencies initially by 25% and then reducing the funding to zero. The intent was that the user fees would replace, not supplement, but would replace the fees, replace general revenues, and that you would go to a user pay idea based upon free market values where there would be no such thing as a shared commons, there would be no such thing as a park that was a place for all people to be able to enjoy, but the public lands would be operated by concessionaires for profit motive. And that is clearly what is happening today. The budgets for recreation in the United States for the National Forest Service have been slashed. And this current year, the president has proposed cutting another $100 million out of the budget. The budget's only $350 million to begin with. So basically, the idea is to starve the beast. And as Ronald Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, said, that was the name of the game, starving the beast to destroy government and to force the privatization of all government facilities. And I just might add, I have done a fair amount of exploring of your parks in Canada, and during the early 90s, I watched the privatization start to become quite apparent. And I haven't been up there since 95 because the privatization had already become so obvious that it was quite disconcerting.
Now, you've been describing some very different visions of the kinds of experiences that people want to have in the outdoors. Some people might make the argument that what you're describing is really just equally valid preferences for different styles of outdoor recreation. I might like to have, you know, AstroTurf and an RV and a TV to watch in my campground, and you might like to go out in a canoe on a lake by yourself. Why do you think that, obviously you don't think that these are just equally valid options. Why do you think that commercial development is wrong in the parks?
Well, a couple of reasons. Now, I'm not going to say that there should be no commercial development anywhere on public lands. I am going to say, however, that the public lands provide for different kinds of opportunities that are available in the commercial world. And perhaps their greatest value is the contrast between going to obviously commercial facilities, and going to nature. A lot of people really do like to have the opportunity to get back to nature. And another important purpose for nature, of course, are all the values that nature provides in the form of clean air, clean water, wildlife, etc. What is happening today is a very small segment of the recreation and tourism industry has taken full control over federal public lands recreation policy, and that there no longer is any democracy in the way our public lands are being managed, but it is management of, by, and for a particular class of recreation users. And the issue that we have spoken of for years is we are watching the commercialization, privatization, and motorization of recreational opportunities on America's public lands. And that's a trend that, if not stopped, is going to end a tradition we've had that goes back as long as we've had public lands.
What do you think it'll take to begin to reverse this trend? Are there points of influence where people can make a difference?
Yes, there are. The unfortunate thing is, under the current Bush administration, privatization is the name of the game across the board. The president is quite literally bankrupting this company. Excuse me, I'm using their language. Is quite literally bankrupting this country, what with our war in Iraq and the tax cuts for the wealthy. The president can say with a straight face, we have no money for this and we have no money for that. We must privatize public lands, we must privatize the interstate highway system, We must privatize Social Security and everything else. So clearly, with the agenda, the bigger agenda out there, we are fighting a battle in a bigger war. We've called this battle the corporate takeover of nature, but we understand that the war is actually the corporate takeover of everything. How do you influence the system? Well, obviously, it's the usual process of communicating to elected officials and communicating mainly to one's neighbors, to one's community. A lot of people have not yet really understood the agenda, and it is still very much an education period. And then the final point is the fee demonstration program had only been a demonstration program. Some states have not seen it at all, whereas the state in which I live, Oregon, had over 1,000 fee sites in this one state alone. So as the program becomes more widespread, the kind of opposition that exists in this state will, I think, become expressed in many more states. And perhaps our government will actually listen to us when people scream and shout that they really would like to preserve our heritage.
Well, Scott, thanks for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Scott Silver is the executive director of Wild Wilderness, located in Bend, Oregon, and their website is at www.wildwilderness.org.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.